Good morning, everyone. My name is Monica Jean, and I am a field crops team member. And I am stationed in the Central Michigan area, and I cover the whole Saginaw Bay region. And I'm happy to be here. I'm sure the sun's going to come out. It's going to be a great day. So I want to thank you all for joining us for our first virtual breakfast of the 2024 season. It may feel a little early or weird out since we just got some snow, but we are creeping in, so it's a great day to learn about early weed, scouting and treatment with Christy here.
Good morning, everyone. I hope everybody's having a fantastic Thursday morning. Today, I thought I would start out talking about a few things that we might want to consider as we start moving into the growing season. So today, some of the things I'd like to are, let's see if I can just a little bit about early season weed control, the importance of it, and some of our different options that we have for controlling some of those early season weeds. Additionally, spring weed control in winter wheat. And then we'll kind of talk a little bit about termination of cover crops, and also mention that there will be a short field day at the end of April that you'll learn a little bit more about, where you can look at some of our demonstration plots on some of the different methods to control cover crops. So what I thought I would do is a couple days ago, I went out and looked at some of our fields just to get a picture of where we're at as far as weed growth. These are a couple pictures I took this last Tuesday, and you can see we've got some good mare's tail that's coming up, chickweed starting to come on strong. But in general, I think as we look at some of the different weeds that are out there, we're probably at a kind of similar size to what we've been a little bit later, even though I know Jeff will talk about how much further ahead we are in the season as far as growing degree days when he gets to his presentation. But just keep in mind, keep an eye on those weed sizes. As we start getting warmer temperatures, a lot of those weeds, those winter annuals that are out there, will take off and gain some size. So why is early season weed control important? Well, there's a lot of things that if we don't control those weeds, you can see from this picture, if we let them go quite a ways, they can cause a lot of different problems. Some of those problems can be just kind of interference with planting and tillage operations. If anybody's tried to run a piece of tillage equipment through a field that has a large mat of chickweed, it definitely makes it more difficult trying to make sure that we get good control. So keep an eye on those things. And in some cases, prior to tillage, it's also beneficial to do a burn down application. If we don't control those weeds, it also provides problems with competition for moisture, lights, nutrients, particularly with some of our germinating crop seeds. And it can also physically interfere with crop emergence. A lot of these winter annuals and some of the earlier season weeds that we deal with can also harbor some of our destructive insects. And I know Chris is online and she might make a comment about that. And some of them can also serve as hosts for soybean cyst nematode. And as those weeds get bigger, they're definitely harder to control. Additionally, we all know that as we're planting, if we don't control those early season weeds, we can basically see huge reductions in yield loss. So this is some work that we did several years ago, and I think some of you have probably seen this. But if we're waiting to control those, a lot of those winter annual weeds that have a lot of growth, until those plants, soybean plants start to emerge, you really start to see some pretty significant yield losses. In this case, if we control them at the unifoliate stage and not at planting or before planting, we had almost a 7 bushel reduction in yield that at today's prices is, equivalent to about $80 per acre. So, it's very important to make sure we get that early season weed control. So when we start thinking about weed control with some of the crops that we're dealing with, it's always important to plant into a weed-free seed bed and really start clean. And again, this can be with tillage or it can be with some of our burn down herbicide applications. If you're looking at tillage, a couple of things you want to consider. Again, tillage is better for controlling weeds when those weeds are smaller and those soil conditions are conducive. If we're too wet, too moist, a lot of times we can cause some issues with compaction and some other things that can happen. Obviously, as those weeds get larger, they're harder to control. And in some cases, it's beneficial to actually put a burn down application on to have those start to go down prior to tillage. Another thing, we've got a lot of vertical tillage tools that are out there that people are using. Sometimes those are great to level out some of those fields, particularly after this last year where we had a lot of ruts that occurred with a lot of our harvest equipment. But those vertical tillage tools sometimes are not as effective as removing weeds. In particular, when you think of things like mare's tail or horseweed, as those come up and they get larger, vertical tillage is really not going to remove those. You need to have some sort of other tillage implement, or again, look at a option with a herbicide to control those. And obviously, aggressive tillage can help bury some of those small seeded weeds like horseweed and really prevent some of the later season emergence that we might see. So, as I mentioned, there's also a lot of, if you're a no-till or even if you're just trying to clean up some areas prior to tillage, we do have some pretty effective burn down herbicide treatments. I'm just listing a few here for soybeans. And usually, what we're trying to do is to get you thinking about using multiple effective herbicide sites of action. And in particular, when we start looking at weeds that we're trying to control early in the season, horseweed or mare's tail is one of them. And that's probably our number one problem from an early season standpoint. And many of these programs that we have listed up here really focus on trying to get broad spectrum weed control, as well as getting control of those glyphosate resistant mare's tail populations that are out there. So if you look at those on the left-hand side, we have some of our products like 240 Ester, Sharpen, Liberty. Those are all very effective at controlling glyphosate resistant mare's tail. And we can also do some different combinations. The one thing to remember with any of our soybean varieties, if we're using 240 Ester, we can use up to a pint, and that needs to be applied at least 7 days prior to planting. Additionally, with a lot of the newer soybean traits that we have, for example, the Enlist E3 soybeans, that gives us some more options for using 240, in this case, Enlist One or Enlist Duo. These are also very effective burn down herbicides. Mare's tail and some of the other weeds. So, tank mixing Enlist One with glyphosate or applying Enlist Dual, which contains glyphosate, can be applied anytime prior to planting, up through planting, and even after the soybeans start to emerge. So, it gives us some more options. We also have the dicamba resistant soybeans with the Xtend and the Xtend Flex soybeans. In the past, these have been very good, particularly when we're using dicamba and a burn down application to control things like mare's tail and other things. Some of you may have heard that as of February 6th, there was a court ruling that basically nullified those dicamba labels. However, the EPA issued an order to where growers, if you haven't purchased or if you're working with a dealer that already has existing stocks, those can be used this year. So if you have Xtend or Xtend Flex beans, if you've the product's been purchased prior to that February 6th date, or your dealer has it, you can still use that to provide some residual control. Now, in the future, things might change, but we need to be thinking about that as we move towards the upcoming seasons. We do have a number of different burn down herbicide options that you can use besides some of the ones that I've mentioned. We've redone the MSU weed control guide this year, and on tables 1A for corn and 2A for soybeans, we have a complete listing of the different burn down applications that you might want to use. Also gives you an idea of which ones provide the best control for some of our winter annual weeds like chickweed, dandelion, horseweed, henbit, pennycress, a lot of the different mustard species. So please take a look at that and look at some of the different options that you have out there. Additionally, when we talk about early season weed control, another thing we always want to think about is using a good soil applied herbicide. And for those of you that heard me talk this year, we really talked about the importance of using these pre-emergence herbicides. And even in a year like this year, where we had drier than normal conditions, where those herbicides didn't quite work right off the bat, in the grand scheme of things, we saw that they worked out very well. So with those soil applied herbicides, those pre-herbicides really look work as a foundation and provide us good control of some of those harder control weeds, and particularly herbicide resistant weeds. They also provide more consistent control, again, throughout the season. It reduces really the number of plants that we're trying to deal with our post-emergence herbicide. And this is really important when we start looking at things like controlling some of our glyphosate-resistant weeds like water hemp and mare's tail. It also provides some flexibility of the post-application. And also, those soil-applied herbicides can be used anytime after tillage or put in that burn-down herbicide application. And here's just an example of why those burn-down or those pre-emergence herbicides are important, particularly for our glyphosate-resistant horseweed and water hemp populations. As you can see
Christy,
here, yes.
your
Yep.
we're not
Slides are
seeing your
gone.
screen.
Okay, let's see. It looks like the host disabled the screen sharing.
Try it again. There we go.
Okay.
Sorry, Christy.
Thank you. So with our pre-emergence herbicides, again, they are extremely important when we're trying to control a lot of these glyphosate-resistant weeds. So you can see from these pictures, you can see glyphosate-resistant horseweed or mare's tail, a couple applications of Roundup, and really no control. By using an effective pre, in this case, generally some of the products that contain metribuzin, and then using that, it provides very good control of a lot of those mare's tail populations. We also see that that's very important when we look at control of water hemp. So this is just one application of Liberty on the left-hand picture of where you can see the Liberty application, and then putting effective pre, and then just following it up with a good Liberty application or any effective post. Has provided really good control of water hemp. So those pres are really important. For a lot of the different pres, there's a large number of them in both corn and soybeans. And again, you can find a complete listing of all those different products and premixtures and see what weeds are most effectively controlled by those different products. So with that, we're going to just talk briefly about a couple other things this season. As we look at how the wheat is really starting to green up, probably a lot of those weeds are starting to green up, but there's a few things I want you to consider before making some of those spring herbicide applications. What's really important is to make sure that we make those applications when those weeds are actively growing. So when we've seen temperatures like this, where the you wake up and it's 19 degrees in the morning, those weeds aren't growing, just like we really don't want to be outside. Also, when the temperatures are that low, the crop is really under stress, and that can cause some issues with some injury to that wheat. So a lot of times we always say a good rule of thumb is to really not apply those herbicides until the to winter wheat when until those daily temperatures are around 50 degrees Fahrenheit or higher. With those cooler temperatures, we can see some injury. And I'll show you a few pictures that we have from the last several years where we've done some research looking at some cooler temperatures. We particularly see this with the ALS inhibiting herbicides. If you look across the screen and you look at where those blue squares are, also those green squares, we've applied things like Osprey Extra and PowerFlex when those temperatures were below that 50 degrees. And we saw quite a bit of stunning, and in some cases, that resulted in yield reductions at the end of the season. So keep that in mind, that those temperatures are really important, as well as keeping in mind that there are some wheat size cutoffs for each one of those products. And that's one thing to consider. Another thing to consider is if you're doing frost-seeded red clover, one of the things is there's very few herbicides that can be applied if you have frost-seeded red clover in the spring. So keep that in mind, and we do have those recommendations in the weed control guide. And then finally, just to mention, one of the things that we have seen this year is that there's been very good cover crop growth. So this year it's going to be important to get out there early and do some termination methods. We do have a fact sheet available. It's called Cover Crop Termination, that's updated every year, looking at some of the potential options. And one other thing that we'll have coming up at the ap end of April, April 24th, if anybody's interested, we'll have some different demonstration plots where people can look at some different methods of cover crop termination for some of those that don't winter kill. And I'm sure Monica will be presenting or sharing some of that information, and you'll be able to find that on the MSUE news for sign up. So just a couple take-home messages. As you look forward to this year, make sure you're prepared with a comprehensive weed management plan. Again, herbicide-resistant weeds, particularly water hemp, is becoming more of a challenge to control and is becoming more widespread. So make sure you keep that in mind. Think about getting some of those pre-emergence herbicides off on there. Start clean. Again, those pre-herbicides will help us out with reducing that pressure on those post-herbicide applications. Other things to consider: temperatures, weed growth stage, and other factors when making herbicide applications, in particular to winter wheat this spring. And then, as we see those cover crops getting larger, probably those earlier termination times, when again, those temperatures are probably closer to 50 degrees, is when we're going to want to make sure that we make those start terminating those cover crops. So with that, just to reminder, we have our new weed control guide available. Some of you have probably already received that. That is also online at our weeds website, which you can access either as msuweeds.com or you can go to canr.msu.edu/weeds. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to Jeff, and we'll be on for questions a little bit later.
All right, we can see it, Jeff. Oh, you're good to go.
All right. Well, thank you. And good morning and welcome to well, what was spring, not so much currently. We'll talk more about that in a second. And following up on some of Christy's advice and suggestions here, we probably the 50-degree threshold, we're gonna probably in many parts of the state, it's gonna be a little while anyway before we see that again. We've got a again a late piece of our winter that never was in many areas here for the next week or two, but I'll talk more about that in a second. I do want to spend some time. We typically talk more about where we're headed and our forecast than anything else. But given the winter season that we've just had and come through, there are a number of issues, and I just want to cover that. So we're gonna look at some climatology because it is to put some perspective on what we've just observed or experienced here, I think is probably important. No, obvious, everyone knows our winter was much milder than normal. These are a departure from normal for the upper Midwest here on the left-hand side. And anywhere from typically from 8 to as much as 12 degrees Fahrenheit above normal. Those are huge departures. It's a huge departure even for a month or a couple of weeks to go that high above or below normal, but for a 3-month period, very just something we rarely see. And on the right-hand side is our precipitation. So that's all the liquid equivalent, both melted frozen precip, which was a lot below normal, and any rainfall that fell. And you can see these are departures from normal expressed here. And you can see that it ranged from near to a little bit, even a bit above normal in the far southern part of the state to below normal or drier than normal, especially as you go north and west up into the Upper Peninsula. And I'll show you some results of that here in just a second. But again, back to the climatology and looking, where does that kind of a winter fit in with things? And the answer is, well, it's a new record, at least back to 1895. The late 19th century is really when we start to have enough records to say something conclusively about, and that's why that year is used to start. But this is a graphic depicting mean winter temperatures. So these are the months of December, January, and February each year. And those are the individual dots. And then we've got a green line in there, which is a moving average showing the longer term trends. And the blue line is a fit a line or linear trend here overall. And one thing, again, with a record warm winter, and down below, I've put some numbers. These just became available here earlier or last week from National Centers for Environmental Information. Our average temperature this winter was 30.5 which for the state, that's averaged across the state, was 10.3 degrees above normal. So not only do we set a new record, we really shattered the old one, which was 2001, 2002. That was the previous record. That was about 8.5 degrees above normal. And the other thing to note here too, you look at the graphic, you can easily see in the upper right hand where that fit in. And another one many people have asked about, what about 2011 and 2012, where we had the crazy heat wave during March? And that one was four is fourth warmest on record in terms of the winter. And you can see many of these have come recently. There is definitely a long-term trend. Michigan's warmer now than it was in decades past, but especially during the winter. And you can clearly see that here. And another trend that is also our winter this year is also consistent with, and that is that our minimum temperatures, our overnight temperatures were warmer on average, or more of that 10.3 degree departure than during the daytime, our maximum. So the mins are warming more quickly than the maximum temperatures, but still significantly warmer. And this one again, in terms of the months, individual months too, there's all sorts of statistics here. December was the warmest December on record. February of 20 of this past February was the warmest on record. January, which had, of course, our for many areas, the only winter weather of the whole season in the middle of the month for about a 10-day period, that was fourth warmest on record. So again, to get 3 months like that, so unusual, it's not a surprise that we set a new record, but we did. And couple one other an unusual we talk about in my unusually mild winter. Well, we did have during the middle of January, I mentioned a visit from the polar vortex and our jet stream change for, again, about a week and a half, and it led to real winter conditions right there in the middle of the month. And we had one very, very cold air mass that was one of the first ones that came down from the Arctic down into the lower 48. The jet stream change allowed that. And interestingly enough, the Great Lakes were unusually warm because of the mild air temperatures. And the extreme minimum temperatures, which we don't typically look at as a variable very often, but that's also increasing in Michigan with time, the long-term trend. But on the right-hand side here, these are the minimum temperatures for this winter. And you can see that if unusual piece here, that the southwestern lower and portions of interior northern or interior lower Michigan had the coldest temperatures. We had some extreme minima during that event in January, down to minus 15. And the southwestern part of the state is climatologically the warmest. We also had temperatures that at that level or colder in the western UP. But as many of you know and appreciate, and thinking back about that, it was because during that Arctic outbreak, at least initially, we had southwesterly winds, which is somewhat also unusual. Typically, we see northwesterly winds with these kinds of weather systems. But this case, we had southwest, and so southwestern lower Michigan, which is typically modified by being downwind of Lake Michigan, was not. And we had winds coming, in this case, out of the central plains and out of the central corn belt into the southern part of the state. And that's why they had extreme minimum temperatures, again, on the order of minus 10 to minus 15 Fahrenheit, while going northward up to places like Leelanau in northwestern lower Michigan, the minimum there was only plus 10. Very, very mild. For a very, very unusually mild, but it's because they had clouds, they had modification of the air going across Lake Michigan, and lots of lake effect snow. Some areas during this outbreak, that mid part of January, picked up over 4 feet of snow. Much of it again was lake effect. So a lot of unusual pieces in this past winter, which is why I spent a little bit more time on it during the last 30 days. Not, obviously, it's been much milder than normal up until very, very recently here. And depending on location here on the right-hand side with our precip totals, a little bit wetter than normal in portions of lower Michigan, but definitely drier than normal as you move into upper Michigan, especially western upper Michigan. Another thing, couple more odds and ends here about where we've been recently and where we are right now. But I mentioned an unusually warm Great Lakes temperatures because of the mild temperatures. Right now, only about 0.6, less than 1% of the Great Lakes are covered by ice. And that is very, very, very unusual for this time of the year. You can see a couple graphics here. The one on the left, this is looking at Great Lakes average ice cover for the middle of March. And the normal here is in the dark or the red line. You can see it peaks typically late February, early March, but our current this year, 23, 24, is down in black. And you can see, and all of those individual lines, those are years going back to 1973. So individual seasons, and you can see that at least right now, it's probably the lowest ice cover on the lakes that we've seen in the last 40 to 50 years. So again, extraordinary, very, very unusual. And on the lower right-hand side here, this is coverage of ice on the Great Lakes as a whole, all the lakes. And there have been some extreme years like 2013, 14, and 2014, 15 in terms of how much, a large area, but there also have been more and more very, very limited years with ice cover. And this year is definitely one of those. It will go down certainly as one of the least ice covered winters that we've had on record. So another impact from the wild temperatures. Snowfall has been below normal, even with that big outbreak in the middle of January. And this is the totals on the left-hand side here so far through the 19th. The departures, I think, is what to look at. And you can see for almost all of the Great Lakes region, snowfall has been below normal. Some cases as much as 80 inches in some of the lake effect areas in the northern and northwestern parts of the state, below where we typically are with the total at this time of the year. Most of the rest of the state, though, significantly, some cases less than 50% of normal. So even with that concentrated area in January, we just have not seen as much snow besides that. Now we're gonna help with that a little bit here over the next couple of days, but still we're getting into this transitional season, the spring season. So not much more. It's going to end up definitely with less snow than normal for the season. Finally, where does that leave us in terms of dryness? And the answer is here increasing a little, something at least to be of note. In northern parts of the state, we have increased areas that are considered abnormally dry in long term, including now the introduction of some D2 moderate droughts and severe drought conditions, especially again in western upper Michigan. You can see that here with the latest drought monitor. About 78% of the state right now is categorized as abnormally dry or worse, but down to D2. But that's something to keep a look at. But remember, too, our precip totals climatologically now are on the increase. And so we should see some probably some changes in this, I would expect, over the next few weeks. But western upper Michigan is where we have the driest conditions, at least at this point in the year. In the southern part of the state, you can see some still normal, especially western, southwestern, lower Michigan are considered to be near normal for this time of the year. Okay, one last thing, and then we promise we'll go on to the forecast. Degree day accumulations. With a record mild winter, especially during portions of February, first time, some of the warmest temperatures ever observed during the month of February, including some low 70s, we had degree day accumulations in much earlier than is typically the case. And that's what you can see here. These are running totals of base 50 degree days. It's at Grand Rapids, but it's representative of much of the state. And I've added here the last 10 years from other seasons. The average or the normal of those 10 years here is in dark black. And you can see it's way down here at the bottom of the graph. And 2023/24 is up here. Initially, we saw some of the earliest development or earliest accumulation of base 50 degree days that we've seen. It's again, well, it's a record warm winter. But the question was, how does it compare to 2012, where we had, remember, everything was so advanced? And the issue, the question or answer is here that yes, at least in late February and earlier in March, we were actually ahead of 2012. But remember, during 2012, it was really beginning in that first week of March, and you can clearly see that in here in red, where it shot up. We had a three-week heat wave in March of 2012, and of course, that's not the case now, and so we've fallen now currently behind once again. We're closer, or we're still much above normal, but we're closer to the pack than we were here 3 or 4 weeks ago. All this translates, though, to, and again, following up on some of Christy's comments, that in terms of degree day accumulations, much earlier than normal seasonal warm-up and beginning of development. This would be primarily for cool species. You could see it in wheat in Michigan. Clearly, wheat's base temperature is just near freezing. And so we have seen, certainly in the southern part of the state, beginning development of that, not so much in the far north, but it's responding to this warmth. And in terms of what it means climatologically, probably 3 to 4 calendar weeks ahead of where we typically are at this time of the year. But given where we are, where we've turned recently, and what the outlook is showing, probably going to see that line here, this running total, get a little bit closer once again to the rest of the pack. Nowhere near what we had in 2012. So that's, and for fruit growers and so forth with the perennials, that's a good thing. Although many of those crops have been brought out of their protective dormant states and are in development, but because of the weather we have now and over the next couple of weeks, they're going to be probably on a little bit more of a hold. And again, not too many 50-degree days on looking at our forecast here, thinking about any early weed control. Probably have to wait into early April or so would be the guess right now. Okay, so where are we headed here quickly? Here's our weather map this morning. We got some lake effect snow showers, northern parts of the state. Other than that, we'll call it mostly cloudy in many areas. A cold day, high temperatures from the 20s, mid and upper 20s north to the mid upper 30s in the south. So definitely below normal. So it's the first below normal temperatures we've seen here in the state for at least a month, but it's likely to continue for the next few days into the weekend with this cold pattern. We have Canadian origin air over the state, and it's going to be here for a couple of days. However, by tonight, you can see a weather system off to our west, this area of low pressure moving towards us east southeastward from the northern plains. That's the next big weather system. A couple things about it. There's moisture with it, but it is weakening as it moves to the east. And so there will be a limit to the amount of water here, but it is going to result in a significant snow event for at least portions of the state. And that will begin here overnight, late tonight, the early morning hours, and into tomorrow, depending on location, but mainly spread from west to east. Here's by 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, and the dark blue there, gray color, indicating steady, light to moderate snowfall here, especially across portions of the central lower, developing and continuing through the morning hours, and finally coming to an end by tomorrow evening in most areas. But we will see accumulating shovelable snow in a number of areas of the state. Right now, it though looks like the greatest threat for accumulating snowfall across the central lower. We probably will see 4 to 8 inches in a band. You can see on the right-hand side there, these are the likely snowfall totals here between early tomorrow morning and then the following morning on Saturday. But again, most of this falls early Friday. Much the lower totals as you go south towards the Indiana and Ohio lines, and then lighter as you go north. So again, it looks like right now the central lower, especially north of I-96, is where we'll probably see the heaviest totals. Temperatures with this will be right around, or maybe even a little bit above freezing. So it'll be the wet, heavy type of snow, a little bit harder to clear off. But that's what we typically see this time of the year. But we haven't had much snow this year, but it is likely that we will see the need to remove some of this here as the day goes on tomorrow. And after that, a cool, or we'll call it cold, and cloudy, windy weekend here for most of Saturday and Sunday. Another weather system, though, comes out of the Central Plains by Monday or overnight, Sunday into Monday. You can see the weather map here for conditions on 8 o'clock Monday. In contrast to this system over the next 24 hours, which will move to our south, this one will go to our west, which puts Michigan on the warm side of the system. So instead of have, there will be some frozen precipitation initially in places like western upper Michigan, but much of the state will see only liquid or rainfall. We will also see a noticeable warm up by Monday and Tuesday of next week. Temperatures back up into the 40s south, 30s north, certainly above freezing. And that's why the precipitation will be liquid at that time. Now, in terms of precipitation with these two events, that's what's expected here generally over the next week. 1/4 to 1/2 inch tonight, tomorrow, and then in the system early next week. So looking at the totals here, that brings us up to as much as an inch, maybe a little bit more than that across southern parts of the state here by next week. And again, a lot of that will be in frozen form. So a fairly wet week, a fairly active storm track, and that's what the medium range suggests here. Michigan on the boundary between colder than normal conditions to our west, warmer than normal to our east. That's true both in the 6 to 10 and 8 to 14 day. The other thing to note, above normal precipitation with that active storm track. That's also true for both of these forecasts. And then finally, looking at our long lead outlooks, they do return. We've still got an El Nino in progress in the Pacific, but that is transitioning to neutral here by the summer with La Nina. That's the cool episode or cool phase of ENSO by this fall. I'll talk. There's going to be some new data. We'll talk about that next week. But I think the important thing is our medium and or our certainly our long lead outlooks continue to point towards milder or warmer than normal conditions as we move into April, the spring, and probably continuing on into the summer as well, with not much direction on precip.
Next week, actually, what we have on is a person I don't think we've ever had before, and that's Ian McDonald. He comes from the University of Guelph, and he's going to be talking to us about repairing damaged fields for the 2024 season. All right, I want to thank everyone for joining us this morning for the first virtual breakfast of the season. I want to remind you that if you want to go back and listen to this one, or if, let's say, next week you are unable to attend but you want to catch this information, we do post virtual breakfast in several different ways. That includes a podcast. It's also on MI Field Crops podcast. It's on all the major streaming sites. There's also it's shared live onto our Facebook page, so you can watch them on there. It gets posted onto the MSU Extension website. And so, several different ways that you can get this information, or later if you want to review something, it should be very easy to find. And with that, we're going to start into our Q&A. And I saw there was quite a bit of questions already in the chat. Since people can't hear us for, if they're on their phone or if they're listening to the podcast, I'm just going to go ahead and repeat some of them. If that's okay, Christy, we can move through them pretty quick here. There was a question about OMRI certified, so like organic. For organic fields, non-chemical based products for commercial use. Although Christy hasn't trialed many of those, I will say that the OMRI website's a really good listing of potential ones to use. Speaking to the person who certifies your farm is also a very smart move to do to make sure you're not going to mess anything up. And then Christy, you mentioned the use of tillage is probably going to be your best bet anyways. Anything you want to add to that?
No, there are some desiccation products that we've worked on that are pretty effective, but again, we haven't really tried too many, and a lot of times heat is pretty important to make some of these work, so just depending. And I know there was a separate question about, best ways in organic systems, and I think, multiple tillage passes is a lot of times our best option for controlling a lot of these early season weeds.
The next one was a person with a cover crop, oat radish cover crop planted, and due to the mild winter, it didn't die, I believe. And so they were asking what's an effective burn down for that, or if tillage would be effective enough.
I think with the sizes that those are, and they probably have been hurt quite a bit from some of the colder weather that we have. I think tillage, it sounded like that was an option that they were willing to do. I think that would be fine versus having to put a burn down application on, because they're probably, especially with some of these colder temperatures that we're getting now, are probably going to be pretty effective on the size of those cover crops that are out there.
Okay. I do want to point out that we have that termination bulletin to help you pick something if you can't tell, that got pasted in there. And then I also did paste in the link a couple times to register for that termination cover crop event. We would love for you to register because we do have to have a food count, a head count for food. So we're fortunate Bayer is sponsoring that. So if you are Wondering about those kind of herbicide options, please join us. Christy, I'm sure will do. She always does such a wonderful job. So, okay, early season warm up. What temp does it need to be effective? A burn down, early season burn down.
So in general, with a lot of the herbicides, kind of that 50-degree cutoff is our best bet. We have done work where we've sprayed different burn down applications at cooler temperatures. A lot of times it does take a little bit longer. And then depending on what the weed species or cover crop species is, for example, cooler temperatures and trying to terminate annual ryegrass does not work well. It's better to wait for those temperatures to warm up before doing that. So there's a lot of hit and miss. It's always better just to kind of wait towards more of that, 50 degree. And I do see that I think Eric put a question in there about what Southwest Michigan, that there's going to be some warmer, a little bit warmer. I think, if you can kind of, it looks like there's some potential days where you might be able to get some applications out there in the next week or so. But in general, if you can kind of wait until they're more stable around that 50 degree throughout, not down into 30s at night, that would probably be more helpful.
Okay. There was one about spraying wheat with PowerFlex due to heavy grass
Yeah.
growth.
So the question is, we've got a lot of fall applications about going out, particularly for winter grass control in winter wheat. So we have a lot of winter annual grasses like rough stalk bluegrass, windgrass, some of those different grasses. And PowerFlex and Osprey have worked very well, even annual bluegrass. In some cases, we might need to come back with a spring application to control potentially some of the broadleaves. With the question that they had there, Husky, or there's some other broadleaf herbicides that would work. One other thing I would consider, take a look at your wheat. If your wheat is been has a very good stand, a lot of times that can help outcompete any new weed growth that might come up this spring. So sometimes those fall applications are enough. So I guess I would just take a quick look and see if you really do need to do a spring application.
Okay, the next one on there was about growth regulators and if there's any new ones for this year. Dennis Pennington is not on today. Phil did try to message him, but we haven't gotten a response back.
Monica, I did get a
Oh,
response
you
back,
did.
and
Okay.
yes, Dennis is not feeling well today, so that's why he didn't join us. So he said that the short answer is no, there's no new growth regulators for 2024. There are a couple that are slated to be ready to go for 2025. So hang tight.
Of course, Dennis will be on here in a couple weeks, but there's also the wheat field day coming up at, I believe it's in Saginaw Valley. I can get that date for you here, but so those are great places to get updates on the wheat production as well. All right, we've got a question for Jeff. How do these accumulated degree days affect, oh, well, it might be a Jeff and Chris, actually. How do these accumulated degree days affect pest development? Do the more seasonable temperatures pause their life cycles?
I think I'll defer to
Okay.
Dr. DeFonso on this one. That's up her alley.
So I think that the insects that overwinter as adults and get up early may wake up a little earlier as the crop is also coming out earlier. So something like alfalfa weevil, multiples of us on here had already seen mosquitoes a few weeks ago, ticks, things like that. But a lot of our other insects are either coming from the south. So I don't know, Jeff, if it's warmer, the same kind of warmth is happening in the south. I know that they had were
It
predicted to
is.
have, well, they were predicted to have more rain as well. So you get a lot of that crop development, a lot of weed growth and all that. And some of those insects can then be moved up from south to north on certain fronts, but that hasn't happened yet. We might be soon for something like black cutworm. I'd have to check that out if we're going a little bit earlier. But a lot of our other insects are under the ground right now, overwintering as larvae. And they, I don't know if being under the soil or under crop residue buffers a little bit, that it might be warmer in the air or on the asphalt, but once you get, down a bit, they're sort of just waiting. And their populations really are determined by what happens once they emerge. Heavy rain, they have it dries up. There's parasitoids out there, so there's a long time for most of these insects. I usually think of July, August, but something like alfalfa weevil, maybe cereal leaf beetle, they're overwintering locally, and they'll get up early, and move out into fields and try to see if they can find something to do. So those are the kind of insects I would worry more about or scout earlier for.
Okay. I'm hearing we need to put out our black cutworm traps earlier then, is
I was
what you're
actually
saying.
thinking about it. I was going to put one out tomorrow, and then I saw it was going to snow, and I decided I didn't need to do that. So I may put one out by the end of next by next week to get my. I like to get zeros first, So.
So,
And
Chris, would there be an opportunity for multiple generations of our alfalfa weevil this coming spring, you think, or not? A second generation to.
no, I don't think so. That's no, I don't think so. But I
Okay.
mean, I guess you could have extended egg laying. You could have some early egg laying, and then it could get cold, and then they would just kind of sit there, And that's always harder in pest management when things extend out because then you don't have one nice spray time and things like that. That's a good question.
If you're
I thought
gonna
that.
one follow-up on that and also on some of your early comment, a real key for looking at if you're gonna have more than one generation and a large surplus of degree day units, it's in the spring. That's especially the month of May. And if May were to be very, very warm, that would be the scenario where those surpluses or deficits, depending on what the spring is like, very, very frequently carry on for the rest of the year. And if for the ones that have the big surpluses, it's usually years we had an unusually warm spring. And we'll see. That of course remains. That's what the outlook is calling for. The other thing I wanted to follow up, Chris, on your comments. It's been warmer than normal over almost all of central and eastern lower 48. So they're advanced, all the phenology is advanced. And so for thinking about the source regions for some of the transported insects to come, they're also ahead of schedule. So then earlier than we typically might see them just because the development in those source regions has also been earlier than normal.
Yeah, the thing about alfalfa weevil is they go through this thing called estivation, which means they go to sleep in the summer, and that's unusual. So they would naturally be kind of have their generation and then creep into the tree lines and kind of sleep a little bit or hang out. And they're not like if we were talking about something like European corn borer. Once they come out, degree days would drive generation. There are places with three generations of corn borer further south. So most of our other insects, yes, would just come out and have multiple generations if possible.
Okay, great, great discussion. The next question was about new methods for killing ragweed and dry beans pre or post, especially if you think you have a resistance, a PPO resistance going on.
Yeah,
Christy?
and unfortunately, we're starting to see more resistance to those PPO resistance like Reflex or PPO herbicides like Reflex. We just don't have any really good methods to control common ragweed if we have resistance there. Our best bet is kind of going back to some old methods that we would have had, which would have been incorporation of Eptam and really trying to hit ragweed when it's very tiny with Basagran, and that's just gonna probably give us fair control, but unfortunately, there's just nothing new.
Okay, that's all the questions I have in the chat box here, unless I'm missing anything. If you have more questions, here's a great time. You can unmute yourself, or you can go ahead and pop them in the chat box.
Question, please.
Yeah, Clay.
I was just going to say, if there's any other specialists, they can have a chance to say something too. Although I've not seen any. Sorry, Clay. Go ahead.
No problem. When you say 50 degrees, that's the high. For how long does that 50 degrees have to be there for it to be effective?
In general, what I really worry about, like with that 50 degrees, is kind of the wheat as far as getting too much injury. in general, we would not want a freezing day before or after that. So if you had a decent warm day prior to that, and then a decent warm day after that, you're probably going to be okay. You want that herbicide to be able to be metabolized by that wheat. Again, we've been able to make applications and kill weeds with lower than 50 degree, but it does take usually a little bit longer, and sometimes some of the species are just not actively growing, so it's not getting as good of control as what you would get when it's warmer.
Okay. I did see Eric was on. He is our soybean. He's going to be our main soybean educator, as Mike has officially retired or soon to retire. We also have Teresa on. I don't know if either one of you would just like to say hi or if you had anything to add here. Teresa's new educator based at the Saginaw Valley Research and Extension Center.
Hi. Yeah, good morning. I don't have anything to add. I know that there's been a few, I'll say for fun, soybean plantings in March. But as far as like serious planting, I don't think we're really going to be too far off of normal. I was just looking at soil temperatures, and we were, you know, we never really got freezing temperatures for soils. And we were like weirdly warm, like up in the 40s and 50s in January. And even into parts of February, we were still, you know, right around 40. But we're back down to right about normal where we've been the last couple of years. And maybe even just a little bit below where we were in 2022. And we didn't hit, I'll say, that 50 degree and rising point until, I'll say, the second week of April over the last couple of years. So I'm not expecting anything different as far as planting for this year. I don't know, Jeff, if you want to chime in with maybe that couple week outlook, if you think that's anything different.
My guess is right now that it's where we are right now. We'll probably see our soils cool off a little bit, a few degrees, especially over the next week. Even though we do have some warmer weather coming early next week, it'll cool off again. And the pattern that we're in is a progressive one, so we're going to be looking at a sort of an oscillation from it'll be near normal early next week, but then probably go back below normal after that. So I not like what we saw here earlier in the February and March, where we had a steady increase. And as you noted, the soil temperatures are way, way above where they typically are, but they're falling back down now, given the recent cooler weather.
I do have a couple of my ultra early planting soybean people that are definitely looking to go. Things were maybe a little still wet for them, but I did text to see, and they are biting at the bit to get out there. So some fun plantings are happening.
And one follow up on that as well. There are dry conditions, actually drier conditions as you go west across the Corn Belt into the Northern Plains, and also below normal snowfall there as well.
Holy freaking cold!
Oh my gosh! I didn't expect this.
All the tractors start.
Okay, I'm gonna. That was
had a little bit of spice there. Yeah,
hyperbole.
But the progress, field work has begun abnormally early. The Northern Plains, especially the Red River Valley, is one area where they have a lot of problems in the spring, and that is not the case this year. There's a lot of work going on much earlier, and so even some experimental planting to see what happens is taking place in other parts of the Midwest too.
Great. Well, with that, I really like Darren's contributions there. We are right up against the end at 8 o'clock here. So I just want to thank everyone, the specialists and the attendees, of course, but also Phil for being the coordinator for Virtual Breakfast. And we look forward to seeing y'all next week. Have a great week.